This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, October 15th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice. KUAF's on-air fundraiser begins October 24th, and all pledges received during the month of October count toward the goal. Go to supportkuaf.com and make your pledge today. Your pledge helps keep insightful and thought-provoking programming on the air, and thank you.
The effort to help residents with some college credit finish their degrees is ahead on Ozarks at Large. It gets a big boost next week when six area institutions of higher learning will combine for a comeback to college fair at the Jones Center in Springdale.
Plus the place where advanced math and crochet meet. And looking for the place where mindfulness and mental health intersect. We'll explain later on Ozarks.
First, Arkansas agriculture experts say the ongoing federal government shutdown could harm state exports. Travis Justice is a senior economist with the Arkansas Farm Bureau Federation. He says important commodities in the state find their way into the export market, and that could change if Congress does not act soon.
Arkansas agriculture in particular relies heavily on our ability to export products overseas. Roughly a third in value of all our farm production is exported. Tied into the budget dilemma here is USDA's support for our export market development across the globe.
Justice says the shutdown has interrupted the state's ability to negotiate with trading partners, monitor export trade, and fund successful programs that have improved Arkansas's ability to sell state-made products overseas.
As many as 100 University of Arkansas employees are facing furloughs as the partial government shutdown enters its third week in Washington. According to the university, it is not allowed to use state funds to pay employees to continue working on federal programs. And while university officials are reviewing all faculty, staff, and student employees paid in any part through federal funds, any furloughed employees will receive official notice from the university's Human Resources Office. But Jim Rankin, the university's vice provost for research and economic development, says not all federal funding is affected and that some federal agencies are allowing invoices to be submitted and funds to be dispersed during the shutdown. In the meantime, the university has requested certification from the State Department of Finance and Administration to allow drawing down funds to support programs in which the source of funding is still available.
Lowell-based J.B. Hunt Transport Services has posted strong returns for the third quarter. According to thecitywire.com, the trucking and logistics company narrowly missed Wall Street expectations because of higher-than-expected operating costs. But the company's net income rose 14% to nearly $89.5 million in the quarter ending September 30th. Total revenue for the quarter rose almost 11% to $1.4 billion, which is in line with expectations, while operating income rose to $151 million in the quarter. That's up from $133 million 1 year ago.
Siloam Springs officials want to crack down on yard sale signs they say deter from the overall aesthetic of the city. Holland Hayden, the city's director of communications, says the ordinance is designed to place restrictions on the size and construction material of the signs.
Those will be restricted to chloroplast, foam board, and commercially produced signs of an all-weather material, the type that are secured to the ground with metal stakes that are provided with the signs. Basically, what that's going to do is prohibit those thrown-together signs that are made from cardboard boxes, A-frame signs, wood frame, cardboard, and really any other material that's not authorized in the specific parameters given.
In addition, yard sale signs would be prohibited from being placed on medians, public rights of way, or utility poles, and valid city garage sale permit numbers would be required to be displayed on yard sale signs. Hayden says the issue of unpleasing yard sale signs has surfaced numerous times over the years. As such, if the ordinance is enacted, enforcement wouldn't take full force immediately.
For a while, it's going to be more of a reminder type of an enforcement because it will take people a long time to become used to this ordinance if it does pass. One of the things that we're going to make sure that we do as a city also is try and do an education campaign, whether that's if people come to the utility billing office to get a garage sale permit, we're going to make sure that our representatives educate those people very well on what is acceptable and what is unacceptable.
Hayden says the city would also use social and other media to inform residents of the changes to garage sale signage rules.
Gas prices in Arkansas appear to be headed down, at least according to Mike Wright from the AAA.
Well, given what's going on in the oil markets, if it continues, I think that we will see below $3 a gallon gasoline. Some individual stations, at least last week and earlier this week, were running at about $2.99, somewhere in that neighborhood. But the fundamentals are in work right now would suggest that we should see relatively low gasoline prices going forward.
The average price per gallon in Arkansas Friday was $3.14. That was a half a cent higher than the day before, but about 48 cents cheaper than the same date a year ago. Wright says the range from the highest prices in Arkansas to the lowest is quite wide, about 30 cents difference.
Since opening earlier this year, 21C Museum Hotel in Bentonville has received much recognition. This morning, the hotel has received even more favorable press. In the website TripAdvisor's inaugural list of hot new hotels, 21C ranked number one on the list of hot new hotels in the U.S., one of only two ranked hotels that aren't on either the East or West Coast. 21C also made the site's new hot new hotels in the world list, ranking fourth behind new hotels in Colombia, Costa Rica, and Morocco.
Cloudy tonight, slight chance of showers and a low near 41 in northwest Arkansas. 60% chance of rain tonight for the Arkansas River Valley with a low of 50. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs from 60 to 65. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain, lows from 43 to 50. This is Ozarks at Large. Later this month, on the 22nd, a half dozen area colleges and universities will combine to hold a one-stop event to help people in Northwest Arkansas with some college credit take a step toward finishing a degree. In Northwest Arkansas, about 28% of residents 25 or older have at least a bachelor's degree, a percentage that's below most of the peer regions often compared to Northwest Arkansas.
The area's first Come Back to College Fair will also have scholarship providers and academic advisors at the Jones Center in Springdale to encourage people to go back to college to complete the work needed for a bachelor's degree. Schools represented at the fair include the University of Arkansas, John Brown University, the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, Northwest Arkansas Community College, the University of Arkansas for Medical Science Northwest Campus, and Northwest Technical Institute.
And several organizations with an interest in the topic will also be represented, from single-parent scholarship fund organizations to the Academic Challenge Lottery Scholarship. The fair is a product of the graduate NWA program that started last year under the direction of the Northwest Arkansas Council. Stacy Sterner is the graduate NWA program manager. Jody Dilday is the executive director of the Single-Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas. Welcome both.
Thank you.
To Ozarks at Large. Well, Stacy, I understand why someone who hasn't completed their college degree, why individually and for their family they'd want to finish it. What's in it for Northwest Arkansas as a whole?
It's very important in Northwest Arkansas that we raise our level of educational attainment. As you said earlier, about 27% of our population has a bachelor's degree or higher. But while Northwest Arkansas has been picking up those degrees in the last couple of years, we're still trailing the nation as a whole and our competitor regions. In order for us to remain attractive for businesses that want to expand or relocate, we have to have a high level of educational attainment.
Those are numbers that businesses or entities, when they're thinking about coming to a region, they look at and they compare?
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the most important factors they look at.
So if Northwest Arkansas has a lower percentage of people with degrees than, say, Huntsville, Alabama, that's
correct.
A mark against?
Yes, that hurts our economic competitive edge.
Now, you guys, the council had the website, I guess, for about a year now. You guys have had it for about a year. So why should you guys have a physical fair? Why have something that people can come to?
The fair offers us some opportunities that the website can't. We can provide face-to-face financial aid counseling. They can have a personal interaction with all of our six partner schools. They can have their transcript evaluated. If they're not quite ready to go back to college, but they're interested, they can talk to some of our adult education providers at NWAC and in Fayetteville, learn about taking the GED, maybe learn about taking a college prep course. They can also register to win one of our 20 $500 college reimbursement tuition scholarships that's being provided by AT&T. They can also get free pizza. It's a family-friendly event. There's no pressure. It's just a relaxed one-stop shop for anyone who's interested in attending college.
Jody, you may be able to speak to this, but do you run into people who know they want to finish that college degree but just feel they can't, that because of time and money, it's impossible?
Yes, and also it's just overwhelming where to start. Even as a parent with a child looking at college now, I'm overwhelmed and I work in higher ed all the time. There's so many options in Northwest Arkansas, and that is a blessing, but it is also daunting. And so sometimes you just need your hand held a little bit and say, start here. This is the first stop, then this is the next step, then this would be your third step.
There are probably lots of people out there who fall into this category. They have some credit. They want to go back to school. But I would think, and I don't know if this is true, but I would think maybe one of the group that it'd be trickiest for would be single parents, because you're not the only person you have to think about. You are thinking about your child or children, as the case may be. But then also you have to find time to go and work and take care of your child. Do you find that that's an issue for a lot of the people you deal with?
It's a balance that they have to strike the right balance. Depending on if they work full-time, they might have to cut back to part-time hours in order to go to school part-time. You know, if you're a non-traditional student and you're wanting to finish a degree, taking 4 to 6 years to do it part-time, it just seems like that's going to take forever. So a lot of times our single-parent scholarship recipients will want to quit work entirely and go to school and knock it out and get it done to better their family. And so not knowing what their financial resources are available to them is a stumbling block.
There will be academic and financial counselors at this fair, right?
Correct.
Who can answer, yes, presumably almost any question.
Hopefully so. We're going to have transcript evaluators that can take a transcript and kind of let you know generally which credits will transfer. If they can't answer your question, I'm sure they'll get back to the student and let them know. We'll also have just independent financial aid counselors there that can tell you how to fill out the FAFSA and other federal, you know, applications for federal financial aid. We'll also have a representative from the Academic Challenge Scholarship, which is more commonly known as the Lottery Scholarship in Arkansas, to answer questions about how to apply for that.
Any idea how many people it will take finishing a degree to move us beyond that 27 or 28%?
Yes. To reach the U.S. average of 28.5%, we would need 2,100 more degree holders in Northwest Arkansas. To reach 30%, which would be more on the competitive level with some of our other competitor regions, we would need 6,600 more degree holders in Northwest Arkansas.
Is there any way to know how many people are out there with half the hours they need or a quarter? I mean, do we know how many people are close? Is there any way to measure that?
That's tough. We know that there's about 20% of our population ages 25 years and older that have some college credit but no degree. But we don't have it boiled down to specifically how many hours they would need.
Right.
When you're meeting some of these people and talking to them and helping them get back into school, what are some of the most common reasons you found for the reason that they didn't finish getting that degree?
We see a lot with single-parent scholarship recipients that they might have started college right out of high school but found that they were lacking the maturity factor that they needed to finish school. Or life just gets in the way. They meet someone, fall in love, start a family, and then divorce happens, and they're, you know, really need to improve their income-earning potential rather than being a two-income household. So life seems to just get in the way.
Any idea, will you be able to track how many people do this because they've been encouraged by graduation NWA?
We're going to try. We've got, because we're offering this the scholarship drawing, we're going to have people fill out a card and ask permission to get back in touch with them. So we're hoping to be able to track these people through our partner schools and see how many actually become re-enrolled and pursue their degree.
Jody, how many single scholarship folks have gone through in the decades that this has been operating.
Well, interestingly enough, I just had our program staff look at how many graduates have we turned out in the last 10 years, and it was 240.
Wow.
So, you know, you think about our scholarship recipients going from living on poverty-level wages, often dependent on HUD housing and daycare vouchers and food stamp assistance and things like that, to earning $36,000, $38,000 a year. The net gain for our community is enormous. We take people who are on the receiving end and add them over on the contributing end. So they're buying homes and, you know, have expendable income that they're putting right back into the work, into our economy.
And non-traditional students from Northwest Arkansas that are likely to go on to these six institutions and receive their degree are much more likely to stay here, right? I would assume.
We assume that, too. We know that our students are looking to stay in the region because their support system is here and they've put down roots here and their children are in school. Interestingly enough, the average age of the child of a single-parent scholarship recipient through our organization is six. And I think there's a correlation there. When the child goes to kindergarten, mama can go back to school because you don't have the daycare expenses that go along with all the other cost-of-living expenses.
Jody Dilday is the executive director of the Single Parent Scholarship Fund of Northwest Arkansas, which serves clients in Washington, Carroll, and Madison counties. We also heard from Stacy Sterner, the graduate NWA program director. The Come Back to College Fair is scheduled for a week from today, October 22nd, at the Jones Center in Springdale.
An interdisciplinary seminar on mindfulness and mental health is taking place October 18th through the 20th on the University of Arkansas campus. The seminar is being led by Geshe Thubten Dorji, a Tibetan Buddhist monk. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this preview.
The seminar is titled Mirror Program for Health and Happiness. It's being sponsored by the Tibetan Cultural Institute of Arkansas and the University of Arkansas, and is being facilitated by the Venerable Geshe Thubten Dorji. This is the second in his series of personal transformation seminars, which emerged from years of teaching American University students the art of mindfulness meditation.
I'm designed this. This is the second seminar. What I'm doing, the first one is just absorbing who we are, where we are, take them the assessment. I give them tools to overcome that. Second level is how you can transform that into a positive rather than negative. Transformation. Third seminar will be then how you can help other people, how you can coach other people.
Geshe Thubten Dorji, a faculty member at the University of Arkansas, is the only monk in the U.S. credentialed as a life and liberation coach counselor. He holds double PhD degrees in Buddhist ethics and philosophy, as well as psychology from Gyuto Tantric Monastery University in Dharamsala, India. He settled in the United States in the late 1990s to study English, teach, and advocate for Tibetans in exile. When he was three, he and his family were forced to flee Tibet after the Chinese invaded and occupied his homeland in 1959. Forced acculturation of Tibetans by Chinese government officials led to the destruction of thousands of Tibetan Buddhist temples and the death of millions. Geshe's family spent 8 years living in refugee camps in Bhutan, and after spending time with monks, he decided at the age of eight to enter Drepung Lusling Monastery in Karmataka, South India, where he spent 3 decades in meditation and study. He said while in America, he's observed great wealth, but also great inner poverty. So acquire the proper U.S. credentials in counseling to help people.
I'm not advertising for people can come to me. Those who need help, so I have provided them space for they can come help me help them out.
Geshe creates space for his clients to practice mindfulness, awareness of the present moment, using ancient meditation techniques. The mirror component in the Mirror Program for a Health and Happiness seminar traces back to ancient Tibetan practice of gaining clarity, insight, and compassion through non-judgmentally viewing the reflected object. Throughout this seminar, scientific research on mindfulness meditation will be discussed, including results from the monk experiments conducted in 2005 at the University of Wisconsin, which found that Buddhist-style meditation not only has emotional effects, but also physiological effects that can reduce stress and boost the immune system. Seminar participants will undergo a thorough self-assessment by answering a 3-page questionnaire.
Assess yourself. See who you are. Some people are afraid to take tests because they're thinking, oh, I don't want to go that far. Yes, you need to dig in. You need to see who you are. You need to reflect yourself, my problem. You can fix your problem with logic reasons. And with, you know, then this can eventually you can help other people. I've seen tremendously changes whole families. I take students into a study abroad, come back here, and they're telling me, this tremendously helped me out. I'm telling my aunt, my uncle, come to go to see you, Geshe. At the end up, they're calling me, they're becoming my student, they're becoming my client. That's what happens.
Geshe Dorji's The Mirror Program for Health and Happiness is considered an alternative therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety disorders, addiction, physical illness, and personal loss. Joining him will be Dr. Sidney Burris, director of the Fulbright Honors College at the U of A, Geshe Dakpa Topgel from the Charleston Tibetan Society, Geshe Tupten Tashi, who holds a master's in psychology, and Dr. Sarah Miller, who operates True North Coaching and works with physicians. 4 years ago, Dr. Miller went through a difficult personal transition and attended a sangha or teaching with Geshe Dorji.
He somewhat recently asked me if I would join in on the conference and talk from this blending idea that he has of the East meets the West and what I can contribute talking about the Western perspective. And having been with Geshe for a little while, I'm starting to see myself the differences of Eastern tradition and Eastern point of view and Western, and how can we marry those two.
Dr. Miller just returned from a coaching seminar at Harvard University where mindfulness was discussed as cutting edge, she said.
And just as I learned at the Harvard conference, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that's an old model now, that we think you have to have safety and food first. But really, self-actualization is look at the monks who grow up basically without a lot of basic needs being met. But the need to self-actualize is within us. And I see that is very important. And I think that's what this conference can bring to people.
Seminar participants will learn the fundamental techniques of meditation. There'll be individual coaching and group work. And for Geshe Tupten Dorji, who taught courses on Tibetan Buddhism at the U of A for 8 years, helping individuals achieve self-awareness is critical because they go on to help others.
That's all that matters to me. And this survey is for that. A mental survey for assessment, what I'm doing here now, you know, my mental health in the seminar courses is for that. Maybe these people who are taking this kind of seminar courses at the end of even now going to help other people, they can help themselves overcome the stress, anxiety, at least they can reach some levels of the peace that deserve to be every human being.
Pre-registration for the course is required, which will take place at the University of Arkansas Student Union. It's open to individuals and healthcare practitioners. Participants who've not attended the first seminar must go through an evaluation with Geshe and his team to participate in this second-level course. Those that complete the course will receive certification. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the Mirror Program for Health and Happiness that is scheduled to take place October 18th through the 20th, you can go online to artibet.com. That's artibet.com.
Thank you so much, Marvin Schwartz, for being our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South.
More than 50 years later, I spoke with the Moonlighters bass player, now an old man living in Newport, about the disastrous events of that Christmas long ago. "That was tougher than a nickel steak," he told me. He was a sweet guy, but meaner than a skunk when he got drunk.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
The inaugural Logan County Single Parent Scholarship Fund Golf Tournament is scheduled for Saturday, October 19th at the Little Creek Golf Club in Ratcliffe. Proceeds from the tournament, which kicks off at 10 a.m., will be used to award post-secondary scholarships to single parents who are working toward a college degree or professional technical training. Registration for the 18-hole three-person scramble tournament begins at 8 a.m., followed by a shotgun start at 10. The entry fee is $150 for a three-person team, and the cart fee is separate. Cash prizes will be awarded for first, second, and third place flights. Also, players will have a chance to win a 2013 Ford F-150, and all golfers will be treated to lunch. I should say the cash prizes will be $300, $225, and $150. Mulligans are available for two for $5. And if you want to register, if you'd like some more information, you can contact Jason Shook at 479-647-0195.
And more golf for more single-parent scholarships, but slightly different. Golftoberfest is Northwest Arkansas's original mini-golf tourney. Now, just like a regular golf tournament, Golftoberfest has a shotgun start. It has a hole-in-one contest. There's a goodie bag for participants, but this is putt-putt.
I like putt-putt.
I do, too. It's a family-friendly event. Morning and afternoon flights are available on Saturday, October 26th. You can go to Gator Golf and show your support for the single-parent scholarships for recipients in Carroll, Madison, and Washington counties. For more information, spsfnwa.org.
The Village Voice, the Property Owners Association's bi-monthly publication, has launched an essay contest. These are a few of my favorite things. Participants are asked to write an essay, no more than 250 words, that highlights the best part of the dynamic recreation community.
Of Bella Vista. Right. Mm-hmm.
Contest judges want to know what qualities members and guests love about Bella Vista Village.
I bet the word golf is involved in this as well.
It might be.
Yes.
Three categories will be featured: children ages 7 to 17, adults ages 18 to 60, and seniors ages 61 and older. The grand prize is a recreation package, including a punch card good for 20 buckets of balls at the Tanier Creek Practice Center, two 18-hole rounds of golf, and an annual pass to Branchwood Recreation Center, Reardon Hall, for 2014. The second place winner will receive a gift basket, and the third place winner will receive a gift certificate to Gasana's Pizzeria. Entry deadline is 5 p.m. Monday, October 28th. Winning entries will be published in the December issue of The Village Voice. For more information, you can email myfavoritebvthings@yahoo.com.
One thing that will not be on anyone's essay is the straight roads of Bella Vista, because they don't exist.
They do not.
Keep America Beautiful's third annual Recycle Bowl is a comprehensive nationwide recycling competition for elementary, middle, and high school students. If your school has a good, solid recycling program or the potential to build one, you can set your strategy toward winning the state competition or the national grand prize. Deadline for registration is midnight Tuesday. You can visit the Recycle Bowl website at recyclebowl.org to sign up. Competition runs through November 15th and culminating on America Recycles Day. Last year, Greenland High School, Northwest Arkansas, won $1,000.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah.
And After the Tsunami, it's a 30-minute documentary film that tells the story of Indonesian college graduate students who came to U.S. universities on scholarships following the 2004 tsunami that killed 173,000 people. You can see this soon. Former President George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton championed the program. And there are free public screenings at 2 and 4 p.m. October 27th at the Fayetteville Public Library, at 6 o'clock October 30th at the Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock. The Hot Springs Documentary Film Festival will also screen the film at 12:15 October 16th at the Arlington Hotel.
This weekend, The Beauty and the Beast are back on stage in Northwest Arkansas. The national touring production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast opens Friday night at Walton Arts Center and will have five performances through Sunday night. Audiences will no doubt be thrilled with the actors and the music, but the set design has earned accolades as well. This morning, I reached Stanley A. Meyer, the man responsible for the set of the show since it debuted on Broadway. He's created sets for more than four dozen productions, and he's been nominated for a New York Outer Critics Circle Award and an American Theater Wing Design Award. This morning, I asked him where he begins to create a set for a Broadway musical set in a fantastical world.
Obviously, you have direction from the producers and from the director. You meet with the director and the rest of the team, and you come up with the conceit on how to approach. When we did the original Broadway version of Beauty and the Beast, the direction from Michael Eisner, who was the head of the company at the time, it was very, very clear. He said, I want the cartoon on stage, live on stage. And now that it's 20 years later, almost 20 years later, when we had the chance to reapproach this version of Beauty and the Beast, We all felt we wanted to go a little bit more evocative and less literal with the sets. And myself especially, I wanted to do something with the design that would make you feel something rather than literally showing it to you. So it allows the audience to use their imagination. Like, I didn't want to quantify, like in the original set, we had a lot of arches and windows and doors. And those all quantify space. Like, that's how big a door is in the castle. So when you can just throw a shape, like in the castle scenes, this big sort of gothic, stylized window thing there that's just showing color, it's, for me anyway, it just gives you a feeling and tells you something about the scale of the castle without literally telling you how big it is.
You know, many of the people who see this on tour are young people who may be seeing their first real big, extravagant sort of musical. So is there any thought about, oh, let's hook them because, let's, you know, theater is magic, but let's show them just how magic it can be?
Well, I have to say that this particular design, my design for this show, is very, very whimsical and evocative and graphic. And I think there is a certain appeal, especially if you've never been to the theater, that you think it's going to be one thing. My personal belief is that literal design in the theater will be the death of musical theater. Mm. And that, you know, we're surrounded in our lives by not, you know, just by common things or a door, a wall, a fireplace. So why not create something that's going to allow you to go, oh, look at that. Oh my gosh, that's a fireplace. Or, oh, gee, a caryatid is alive. mold. You know, it's just, for me, I just love the idea that when you go to the theater, your imagination is stimulated and involved.
How practical do you have to think, especially with a touring show, that this will look great, but it also has to load in properly, it has to be safe, it has to travel easily?
This is, I just had a conversation. I'm having a meeting with a new producer this afternoon, actually. And we've been talking about that. I said, don't tell me we're going to start designing the tour and we're going to have you're going to give us 2 days to load in, because that's really going to affect the cost of building it. I mean, the whole thing is that with this tour, Beauty and the Beast, the main objective, you know, obviously was to approach it in a different way, a more stylized way, but also that it had to install in half a day and it had to break down in half a day and get into the truck or, you know, however it was going to be transported. And so it's monumental because everything from conceiving the pieces to how they break down, how they break apart and, you know, and fit onto a truck or go over the ramp, all that stuff, you know, plays into how it goes in or how it comes together.
Do you have to think about, I guess you wouldn't think about a tour and, okay, how big are the venues, how small are the venues, because it's going to be one set and it's just going to work everywhere.
We do have to take that into consideration. They tell us the smallest footprint, and then we go from there. I know that when the first national version of Beauty and the Beast, which went out, which actually took 2 weeks to load in, because Michael Eisner wanted the full, big Broadway castle version, and there were hard portals for Be Our Guest. I mean, it was like taking out the Broadway show. And it was the Disney Company's first Broadway musical, and so they wanted people out on the road to have that experience. So it wasn't such a concern. But then, of course, they came back to us and said, well, we know we told you it has to fit in the depth of a 30-foot theater. If we could fit it into 28 feet, there's 24 more stops in America that the show could play. And we'd be like, okay, we'll figure it out.
Oh,
and so the goal on something like this show, it's, you know, there's a lot, I mean, for the actors and the dancers and performers and the crew, because there's times when it goes into places and they don't have all the pipes, system pipes that we need to hang the scenery. So stuff isn't a part of it.
Is it ever a concern with a set designer that you want to make sure you don't make the set so overwhelming that it takes away from the three-dimensional people on stage?
That Yes. I guess, yes, yeah, that is a huge, huge concern. And we talked a lot about that when we created this essence of the design, that it would be very storybook-like and feel sort of Eastern European, and there'd be lots and lots of details. But still, because of the actual, I mean, it looks big, but the actual space that the actors are performing in is a very intimate, small space. We're using forced perspective with the portals. And so what looks like it's a ginormous space is actually, it's actually not that much that we're filling. So it, you know, and it morphs and changes and from scene to scene. So, but it, that is a prime, that is crucial to you know, the staging of the piece, that you, when you're having this intimate, fantastic moment between the Beast and Belle when they're in the library and everybody's looking on and hoping that they're going to connect, and when he grabs her hand and, you know, and she grabs his hand, actually, and there's this really intimate, sweet, soft moment, it's as big or bigger than the theater because of how it's staged, how it's, the music that's happening there, the acting, everything about the moment. But it's the set, you know, it's they're supporting them, but it's also it's minimized in some way because the moment is so strong that it's almost like the set goes away.
So if you want to create a successful set design, all you have to do is make sure it complements the story but doesn't overwhelm it. Make sure it can be taken down and put up in half a day. Make sure that it travels well and make sure that it helps tell the story. Other than that, there's nothing to it.
Yeah. Just an hours and hours of sketching and painting and model building and presentations and just to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Is there anything that we should look for that maybe a small detail that the normal patron we wouldn't notice that we should see, maybe a little signature piece of set?
There are in the portals, actually, there's all sorts of little animals and creatures that are sort of hidden within. And one of them is on the third portal is an upstage left. There's our cat, my cat. My partners and I, our cat Barney is actually hiding in the forest. So he's there. And another really interesting fact that when we were developing the town units, and we were looking at all this sort of Eastern European references, my partner is, his family is from Latvia. And so his mom gave me a book about traditional patterns, mm-hmm. and for Latvian clothing and accessories and pottery and carvings and walls. And so the set, which looks like needlepoint on some level, some of the panels are, you know, it's made to look like needlepoint or that, is has very traditional Latvian patterns. And if you're Latvian or you know anything about the culture and you see the town for the first time, you instantly will know that I've been referencing it. There's also some of the patterns which I thought looked like, one of them is the gas, the one that's on the tavern, which is a big red pattern, and it looks kind of like a snowflake, is actually, the pattern in Latvian is star.
Mm.
So Gaston thinks he's the star, so he, of course he would have that pattern on his building.
Stanley A. Meyer is the set designer for the national touring production of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. The production opens Friday night at Walton Arts Center and has 5 shows this weekend, lasting through Sunday night. You can learn more at waltonartcenter.org. We've made it to the middle of October. It is Tuesday, October 15th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Yasmin Krahita.
And with us in the middle of October is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Let me read you a fabulous lead. I didn't write it, so it's okay. There's a chill in the air when darkness falls and blood runs cold through ghost hunters' veins. Zombies shamble and things go bump in the night. It's a creepy time of year.
Bram Stoker?
No, a reporter that works for us named Allison Carter.
Okay.
Who is just learning to be a journalist. And she's fabulous. And she has been rounding up all the Halloween events. Well, the one that she's absolutely enamored with right now is Farmland Adventures in Springdale, run by members of the Parsons family, and they've been inviting people to their farm for the last couple of years to go through a corn maze, pick squash in the pumpkin patch, tour the working farm on an open-air wagon, and pet all sorts of funny little animals and even funnier big animals. They had baby pigs when she was out on site the other day. They also have camels, a yak, a goat, Hereford cows, and a zonkey who would love to be petted by adoring youngsters.
A zebra, a donkey.
Yeah,
yeah, a zonkey. Yeah. So you can check out more about this at 799-5033 or email farmlandadventures@cox.net. Pig races are every Friday and Saturday starting at 5 o'clock on Friday. And the petting zoo is open during regular business hours. And there's all sorts of other things for little monsters, including the Haunting on Cherry Street in downtown Rogers. It's a light display viewed from the sidewalk. And then there's a full production on October 30th and 31st. And Stories in Stone Cemetery Walk and Bean Supper, which happens to benefit the Benton County Historical Society. That would be Thursday at the Bentonville Cemetery. I got to admit, I'm not sure where a bean supper and a ghost walk go.
It's autumn. They're both connected to autumn. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, check out more in What's Up every Friday until Halloween.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
For the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program, an agency of the Department of Arkansas Heritage, I'm Rachel Silva with Arkansas's Historic Places. The Mount Sequoia Cottages Historic District was listed in the National Register of Historic Places in 2012. And includes the stone cottages at 808 and 810 East Skyline Drive in Fayetteville. In its early years, the Western Methodist Assembly on Mount Sequoia operated on a very lean budget. The sale of residential lots surrounding the assembly on Skyline Drive helped to support the institution during hard times. In 1936, Reverend Sam Yancey, who was then superintendent of the assembly, purchased 93 lots. In 1940, he sold two lots to Reverend E.J. Reeves and his wife Florence. They built two cottages, one for them and the other for rent. Although additions were constructed on the cottages to make them practical for year-round habitation, they retain a high degree of integrity from the street. To learn more about Arkansas's historic places, visit ArkansasPreservation.com.
It's unlikely you've ever linked crochet to hyperbolic planes, those abstract figures residing in a realm of advanced mathematics. But if you enter the terms into a search engine, like Google, you'll get more than 1.1 million hits, and almost all of them, in some way, connect to Diana Taimina. She's an adjunct associate professor at Cornell, but last week she was on the University of Arkansas campus to appear at a reception in honor of her crocheted art, art that takes the shape of hyperbolic planes. It was early Friday afternoon when she managed to navigate through homecoming weekend traffic and arrive at the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery on the University of Arkansas campus to see this particular exhibit of her work installed for the first time.
Yes, exactly.
So what do you think?
Well, it was great. It looks great. Well, I shouldn't say that about my own works, but it's... Well, no, the way it's represented is very nice.
Her work has captured the attention of worlds that, while maybe similar, don't often cross paths, high-level mathematics and high-level art. Her works have been on exhibit at the Smithsonian, at Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum, as well as in museums and galleries in the UK, Italy, Belgium, Ireland, and her native Latvia. A subsequent book, Crocheting Adventures with Hyperbolic Planes, was the 2012 Euler Prize winner. The Euler Prize is given to the best book about mathematics that has a positive impact on the general public. All of this from a woman who, as a student at the University of Latvia, despised her hyperbolic geometry class, but knew she needed to get through it to earn her degree.
Now you have to pass some courses, and you get them passed, and then you think you will never touch them again.
And then
you are like assigned to teach it. And then, of course, I'm thinking, so I don't want my students to feel the same way I was feeling about that course. Well, I had to figure out how to do it more attractive and actually so that students can understand it.
Hyperbolic planes are not shapes or concepts everybody can relate to immediately. In an oversimplified nutshell, hyperbolic planes are something of the opposite of many shapes in the three-dimensional world. During her visit to Fayetteville Friday, Diana Taimina walked to a podium holding two of her crocheted works. She pointed to the podium's flat surface.
No curvature, so therefore we call it zero. And for numbers, you know, like there are positive numbers and negative numbers. And Carl Friedrich Gauss, in 1820s, he figured out that we can characterize two-dimensional surfaces the same way.
So if the podium is flat, a round object like a melon or soccer ball is said to have constant positive curvature. As you turn it, the object stays the same. It stays closed. The mathematician Carl Friedrich Gauss theorized there must be something opposite, constant negative curvature. And creating these figures in three dimensions helped students better understand them. William Thurston, a mathematician, created paper versions, but paper is relatively fragile, and the shapes would fall apart after several periods of folding and creasing. So when Diana was assigned to teach hyperbolic geometry, she already had many years invested in her hobbies of knitting and crochet.
And mathematics, that's my work, and, you know, don't mix them. And then suddenly it clicked like I can mix them.
Her work was a success in the classroom, but also in galleries. In 2004, she was invited to exhibit her work at the Institute for Figuring in Los Angeles. And while there, she delivered an address about geometry.
People were looking at these, and I was talking about mathematics. And people were looking at that just from the different perspective like you do, and say, oh, but that's an art. And I never thought about it, particularly when at school the teachers were telling me you can do anything but art. So, you know, and then being pronounced to be an artist, that was like kind of a shock for me.
One of the pieces on display on the University of Arkansas campus this month is titled We Are the Same. It's two brilliant, identical shapes of blue and orange that resemble a cross between a starfish and a wadded-up scrap of paper. Simple and soft, they make what could be an intimidating structure seem inviting. And Diana says this piece goes beyond just crochet and beyond just math.
And I was very happy that people picked up that it's not only mathematically the same as I'm explaining you, but they are giving also the social meaning, because that's what I wanted to say. We might look different, you know, like, and some of us might be white and some of us might be black and some of us might be yellow. Well, just, and we can speak different languages, but there are some things which are the same. We are humans.
We Are the Same first exhibited at Philadelphia's Abington Art Center. Many of her works and explanations can also be found in the book Crochet Adventures in Hyperbolic Planes. She says putting this book together brought her full circle, since it was a book by famed mathematician Martin Gardner that was given to her in seventh grade that helped shape the direction of her life.
That book, like, opened my eyes. A math can be something else than in school. In school, it was something like, oh, it's easy. But then there can be also the fun. And then I thought, like, okay, maybe I can write a book that somebody can go through the book. It's kind of like in three layers. You can look at the pictures and just look at the pictures and read the captions, which if you notice, there are captions are longer. And then if you are interested, go and read the chapters. They are pretty independent. And then when you're really interested, okay, study some more chapters and then look at the back. There are the references where you can go. So, and I was happy, actually, that I got there were middle schoolers who have used this book for the science fairs and, you know, writing to me and then parents writing to me, oh, my child really enjoyed the book. And I said, okay, it worked. So, well, maybe somebody one day will say that I became a mathematician because there was this book which showed me what math can be a fun.
Diana Taimina's work can be seen through October 27th in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery inside the Arkansas Union on the University of Arkansas campus. She was in Fayetteville last Friday for a reception for the exhibit. And she had one more thing to say before our visit ended. Remember, she said, that originally she hated the subject she's now helping teach. And also remember, she was told early that she could be anything but an artist. So,
never say never. That's exactly. That has happened to me, like, oh, I'm never going to do that. That's what I'm going to do the next.
This is Ozarks at Large. And I want to mention one more thing about her book, which was Crocheting Adventures in Hyperbolic Space, mm-hmm. in Hyperbolic Planes, rather. I mentioned that it won the Euler Prize in 2012, which is a very highly regarded prize for mathematics. It is given to the best book of mathematics for the for the general public.
Oh, then I should read this book.
Yeah. And it's very pretty as well. Now, it also won another prize that I did not even know existed until I did this story.
Those are my favorite kind of prizes. Well, there are so many of them.
You're going to love this one.
Oh, good.
It won the Bookseller Diagram Prize for Oddest Title of the Year.
Excellent.
Now, this is a prize that has been given out since 1978.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome.
The idea is it's given to books that the title of the book is not done to win the prize. It's not done in irony. It's not a book of humor. This is something that someone actually passionately titled this. Like Crocheting Adventures in Hyperbolic Planes.
Right.
I mean, that's what it is.
You didn't make that up just for funsies.
Right, exactly. Here are some past winners.
Okay.
These are all legitimate books. The first one ever was in 1978, the University of Tokyo Press, the title Proceedings of the Second International Workshop on Nude Mice.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. 1980, Prentice Hall, a reputable publishing house, had The Joy of Chickens, which was about breeds of chickens.
Awesome.
I am not making any of these up.
Oh, I know.
In 1984, Ann Wilson's book, The Book of Marmalade, its antecedents, its history, and its role in the world today.
Want to read that one.
Okay, it's a history of marmalade.
I like marmalade.
Well, you would love that book. 1992's winner, How to Avoid Huge Ships. It was.
I avoid them by not going in the water.
There you go. It was a book by John W. Trimmer, Advice to Pleasure Boat Sailors on the Dangers of Shipping Lanes.
Mm-hmm.
1994's winner was Highlights in the History of Concrete, which was about the history of concrete.
Okay.
1995's winner, Reusing Old Graves, a report on popular British attitudes.
That's a thing?
The description about the book is it's about reusing old graves. So there you go.
Okay.
2002, Butterworth's Corporate Manslaughter Service, which is about corporate. But my favorite, I think, back-to-back years, 2004 and 2005. The 2004 winner, Bomb-Proof Your Horse, which was actually a guide to how to make your horses not react to any loud noises.
Oh.
A practical
that's
guide.
Very practical and difficult to do.
Yes. Bomb-proof your horse. And 2005 winner, People Who Don't Know They're Dead, How They Attach Themselves to Unsuspecting Bystanders and What to Do About It. So there you go. Those are some of the winners.
Fabulous.
Yes. And the 2012, the reigning winner, because 2013 has been awarded, is Goblin Proofing One's Chicken Coop.
Awesome.
These were all winners of the Bookseller Diagram Prize for Oddest Title of the Year.
I'm glad this is the thing that I learned today.
Happy to help.
This is folk singer Michael Jonathan. The Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour is coming to Eureka Springs for a huge double show worldwide broadcast. It's Saturday, October 26th at the Odd, featuring the legendary Michael Martin Murphy and Leroy Troy in the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band, plus amazing artists from across the Ozarks. For tickets, 253-7333 or visit ozarkfolkfestival.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Strickler.
Strickler.
Washington County?
Yeah.
South.
Over by.
Western Washington County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Over by the National Forest, kind of?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't forget that all of October is KUAF's fundraising month.
Yes.
The on-air fundraiser will begin on the 24th,
mm-hmm.
but all money we receive in all ways counts toward our goal.
Yes, I know we've had some money mailed to us. You can also pledge online at KUAF.com. You can walk it in. I will be happy to take that check to Molly Ron, our membership director. Any way is convenient for you. We appreciate your continued support.
That's right. Tomorrow, you and Christina Thomas
mm-hmm.
on the air with a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large beginning at noon.
Yes.
I'm on my way to Fort Smith later today.
Yeah.
Work on some stories there as well.
I'm excited to hear about some of them.
You went to Devil's Den.
I did.
Yesterday, and we're going to hear, because they're about to celebrate their 80th anniversary.
Yes, and we'll have that story this week as well as, I know tomorrow you're going to Fort Smith today, but you'll have a story about a special place in Fort Smith.
That's right, a place that has quite a colorful history.
I'm very excited about it.
Miss Laura's.
Very excited.
Right, which is where the Visitors and Convention Bureau is now, but lots happened in Miss Laura's over the time that it's been there.
Perfect.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening.